Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. P-A-I-R.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
We are so excited to tell you about a recent release from Broadleaf Books, a publisher of books on social justice, society and culture, personal growth, spirituality, and more. The book is Radiant Rebellion: Reclaim Aging, Practice Joy, and Raise a Little Hell by Karen Walrond. This book asks, what if aging is something we should aspire to and not dread? What if we fought against aging as a season of decline? Essence Magazine has called Radiant Rebellion an intriguing investigation into how we can reclaim aging. When Karen Walrond experienced her own year of transition, including a milestone birthday, wedding anniversary, and the emptying of her nest, she decided to do a deep dive into the dimensions of getting older, including exploring what aging means to our health, beauty, spirituality, adventure, meaning, and purpose. In her conversations with social workers, activists, neurologists, and even clergy, Walrond satisfies her curiosity about why our culture treats aging as a time of dwindling capacity. She then sets out on a series of experiments to rebel against those conventions, including letting her hair go naturally gray, going on a silent retreat, revamping her health practices, and plotting her next adventure. Radiant Rebellion shows us that internalized ageism, that is, bias against our future selves, is not our only option as we get older. We can write a different story and raise a little hell along the way. For Radiant Rebellion and more, visit broadleafbooks.com. Happy reading, and thanks so much to Broadleaf Books for sponsoring this episode.
Hey everyone, my name is Jordy and I use she, her pronouns, and I am joined today by two other contributors.
Hi, I'm Mariquita Guerrera, she, her, hers.
Hi, and I'm Nox Quiros, also she, her, hers.
And we are here to discuss the book, Do Your Worst by Rosie Dannon. This is a romance book that follows Riley Rhodes, an American occult expert who recently arrived in Scotland to turn her family's knack for the supernatural into a legitimate business. She's hired to break the 300-year-old curse at Arden Castle, but runs into a bit of a problem. The disgraced archaeologist, Clark Edgware, who tries to get Riley fired. So off the bat, what did you guys think about this book?
So I feel like Rosie Dannon is not one of my favorite authors. I will say that I wasn't like a huge fan of her previous book, the name of which, The Roommate, I think it was. Something like that. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I wanted to give this one a shot. I wanted something a little bit lighter. It definitely fits the bill for that. I am happy to suspend my disbelief, but some of what happened in this book, I felt like was like so much of a stretch that it kind of felt like, oh my God. There were a couple of times I just kind of like fast forwarded a little bit through what the main character was like saying and how she was like having a meltdown. I couldn't relate to that, but the spicy scenes I thought were like on point, and I appreciated that there was like more than just one of them. That's like the overview of how I felt about it. How about you, Nox?
So I was also just like, hey, at least this is lighthearted, because I've been in a period of my life where I needed something lighthearted, and this, yeah, it definitely does fit the bill. I mean, there's serious moments, you know, talking about like betrayal from friends and complicated family relationships and things like that. I can relate to having meltdowns often, What I couldn't relate to was somehow liking Clark because I hold a grudge. I am petty. If I'm declaring war, I'm declaring it against you. And I don't care how sad your backstory is. He was such a dick.
He was a total dick. And okay, I want to make something really clear. I also have many meltdowns. And so I could relate to that. But sometimes you just get like a little dickmatized, you know, like sometimes that libido just like leads the way. So I kind of understand that. But yeah, there's like a lot of red flag central going on here.
Yeah, this one for me, I love romance, but recently, I don't know if it's because I feel jaded about my own love life or just what I've been seeing, but it's like when I go into a romance book, I want my fictional boyfriends to be top notch, and he just didn't do it for me. I didn't feel anything toward Riley or Clark. Like I didn't click with the characters. I didn't really believe their relationship. I just was left feeling confused about them, and like it just missed the mark for me. And I felt like I went in with moderate to high expectations for this book because of the description, but it wasn't my thing.
There's a scene early on where they're trying to prove they're not attracted to each other. So she takes her clothes off and gives him a massage. And I had no idea what was happening.
I was like, in what world does this happen? Like, and I get like for books and movies and stuff like that, you kind of have to suspend some of your belief when it comes to those moments because it could be in there for levity and stuff like that. But I just felt like there were too many moments where I was asking myself, what is happening? Why is it happening like this?
Absolutely. Like there were just too many of them. Like this book was like so much Deus Ex Machina, you know, there are like so many pieces of it that you're like, come on, like that is not how that would happen. If it was like sprinkled throughout, maybe. And I also felt like this book couldn't decide like what genre it wanted to be in, if it wanted to be like fantasy or if it wanted to be romance. It didn't have a foot enough in like one side for it to make any sense. And like, not to like ruin anything, but I'm sorry, you can smell a curse? That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life. Knox is laughing so hard. What the hell? That was, I'm sorry. I really am sorry for anybody that liked that. I would like it a lot more if it like shimmered or something, but for it to smell weird, that's bizarre. That's bonkers.
Yeah, like if you got like a sixth sense about stuff, what are you thinking, Knox?
Sorry. So, it's so dumb that you can smell a curse. I'm sorry. But there are books that have done the whole idea of smelling magic before, of magic having a scent, and they did it well. But my autistic ass gets overstimulated by spells, and I'm just trying to think. To me, a curse would smell like being in a Bath and Body Works for like 40 minutes without escape. That's what a curse smells like to me.
I was going to ask what you guys thought about the magical and fantasy elements to this book, but it feels like it's all coming out. I was left, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, Marquita. I think that there wasn't enough to any one particular category. Like, it's hard to even consider this romanticy because I feel like they didn't lean enough into the magical side of things.
Yeah, the magical side of it was just like, it just only came from her, right? And like from her like backstory, but like it didn't even feel like it was, I don't know how to describe it. Cause like it wasn't that the author didn't like bring it up because it was brought up constantly, but like it didn't feel like it was well threaded through the story. You know, it just felt like nobody believed that this happened except her family. Like no one believed in this like curse breaking. There wasn't any aspect of the world where it seemed like anyone else like existed in this reality. It was just like their own little private like lineage thing. And a lot of other like magical realism books, like there are other magical pieces that are woven throughout that like bring that out and make it feel more realistic. And this just felt like we took a character out of a different book and plopped it into this book. And so like between that and like her being frankly quite annoying, and the love interest like not being that attractive. Like the only thing about him that was attractive was that he was like physically attractive and apparently like good in bed, but like it just didn't feel like things meshed very well.
It also felt like, I don't know if this is just me maybe not remembering things clearly, but it felt like when we were talking about the magical abilities that Riley had, I was getting a sense like, oh, is this kind of like, is she like a Ghostbuster? Does she have magical abilities? Is there even magic in this? I like it was hard to kind of tell from my perspective what exactly this curse thing and how she was going about breaking the curse or any of the other curses that she referenced before.
So, from what I gathered, it's that she like studied what her grandmother learned about curse breaking. So it's not like a I have this innate thing. It's the idea of studying all these things that her it because she does explain it in a very scientific way. Clark says at one point he goes, "Oh, she's actually very methodical, and if this was real, because Clark, that would be a very scientific way to go about it because she has a method. She's explaining like properties and things like that. And she did mention like when she was five, she was practicing like reciting things on the playground, and that's why nobody wanted to be friends with her until she got hot.
And might be practicing sex magic.
Oh my God. But I hated reading that because I also know I had friends who were like, "Oh, if I go out with like a witchy girl, we're gonna have some crazy sex magic and stuff." So like that, the fact that I knew that that's something people actually think, I had to put the book down for a second and go.
I felt like for the parts of the curse breaking where the line that they kind of had to go on was when enemies are no longer enemies or something like that. And it felt kind of obvious, but of course, they had to go down every avenue before figuring out what to do. And was kind of like, oh, this is frustrating.
It was so obvious.
It
It
was
was
so
obvious from the time you mentioned the last daughter. Your
yeah.
letter made it obvious, where it's like, wow, this sounds like one of the bodice rippers. Yeah, it did. And it made it incredibly obvious what happened. It's like, oh no.
I don't know if it's maybe a me thing, but it just made me cringe that they then kind of approach sex in this step-by-step kind of way. They're like, oh, well, if I don't like him, so then I don't know why I'm feeling this and just stuff like that. I was listening to the audiobook and me and my sister were listening together and we were just like squealing because it was like kind of uncomfortable. I don't know. It was off-putting a little bit for me.
The things I did like about this book is that it was light, and it didn't take a lot of like brain power to get through. In fact, I would recommend you turn off your brain entirely if you want to like experience this book. There were just too many pieces of it that I felt were really like you said, like kind of cringy, and like it isn't something that I would hand out or recommend, I think, to anybody. It's hard when you feel like you're smarter than the characters the whole time, and like I don't know. I just felt really frustrated by it. I'm not upset that I read it, but I probably will remember it next year, because I'll just be like, oh, that book. But I'm not gonna revisit it, probably.
I think that this book had a lot of potential, and that's the part that's getting me. Because genuinely, this was a really good premise, and I think that there were moments where I was like, this is really interesting. Like the what happened with the curse and the daughter and the son, like that was so obvious from the beginning, but I would have loved to have heard more about it and to follow that a little bit more. I also would have really loved to learn more about Riley and her family and how they got into this because she even says how her mom didn't follow it curse breaking. And so I would have loved to hear more about that. I would have also loved any love interest that wasn't Clark. I read this book, I was like, I wonder how an archaeologist becomes disgraced, right? Because that's like the whole thing. And then I'm like, oh, I know it's because of the whole find and everything, but really it's his personality.
I wanted her to have like the love interest with her bartender friend.
Oh my God, I love the bartender friend.
Yes,
Or
I.
the girl writing the thesis on the curse.
Or really just any of the other
Anyone.
people. Yeah.
The only worst choice would be Clark's father. That'd be the only worst choice.
For sure.
That's the sequel. I'm kidding. Don't do that. Don't do that.
This book, to me, I feel like I would have DNF'd if we weren't having this discussion. And what's unfortunate is usually I'll get like halfway through before I'm like, okay, I really gave it a good run. I really tried to see where this would go. But I was on chapter 3 or something. And I was like, oh, I just know this is not for me. But I tried to keep like a positive outlook. And I'm like, I remember wanting to read this so bad and it had such good potential. But I couldn't. I feel like if you want a book that has to do with archaeologists falling in love, not necessarily having any magical elements, Raiders of the Lost Heart by Joe Segura was so, so good, and I highly recommend it.
I want to read it based on that title alone, honestly.
Yeah, hello? What?
It was so fun. If you're a fan of Indiana Jones, and what's that, the Tomb Raider? What's
Lara
her
Croft.
Name?
Lara Croft.
Yes, yes. It's like a mashup between those two.
Nice. Hopefully less problematic, because Indiana Jones is like...
Yeah.
This book had so much potential. It makes me sad because there were moments where I was like, oh, we might be getting somewhere, and then we didn't. I actually might read her next book, the author's next book, and see, because I feel like you could only get better.
Well, thanks for bringing us a recommendation, Jordy. Yeah, as an alternative.
Yes, alternative. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is next discussion is...
I would love to. I really enjoyed that book. All right. Do you guys have any parting thoughts?
Not really. I just felt a little disappointed by it, I think. But it wasn't too long. It didn't, you know, it wasn't too hard to read. I don't think I'll read another Rosie Dannen book. But yeah, I'm not mad I read it. It's fine.
I'm not going to say that I recommend this because I don't. But I'm also not going to say to people who are listening to this, don't read it. Because like, again, it... For me, for the very specific purpose that I needed, because I'm going through it, it really did actually help my mental health because it was light enough, but also has serious topics. And also I got to yell about how much I hate Clark. Like, I messaged my partner at one point. I'm like, I hate this man. And they didn't know I was reading a book. So they were very confused for a second. And then I explained, I sent a screenshot because I read this on Libby. And they're like, that makes more sense. It served a purpose. I'll try again.
I would say if you're somebody who hasn't read any sort of fantasy or witchy stuff like that, and you kind of want to dip your pinky toe into the waters to see if potentially you could like something, I feel like this might be a good place to start because it's not overwhelming, because I know some people could get overwhelmed by either world building and terminology and stuff like that. So I would say maybe that this book would be kind of a good start for that. But I don't think I'll be reading any more by this author, unfortunately. All right. Well, thank you for joining me in this discussion of Do Your Worst. Hopefully our next discussion, we can be super excited about recommending this to everybody. But for any of the listeners out there, if you love this, share your thoughts with us. If you also weren't too thrilled with it, share your thoughts. But happy readings, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
If you've been around for a while in the feminist book club world, you probably know how much we love Scorched Grace by Margot Duahi. Well, our favorite nun is back with the second installment in the Sister Holiday mystery series, Blessed Water. So are you a fan of mysteries? Okay, what about queer mysteries? With a punk rock, foul-mouthed, chain-smoking, tattooed nun with a gold tooth and a heart of gold as the detective. The kind with exquisite pacing that you can really just devour in one sitting. In Blessed Water, Sister Holiday teams up with former fire inspector Magnolia Riveau as they discover the body of a priest in the Mississippi River in New Orleans. You can feel the clock tick as the story unfolds in three suspenseful acts: Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday. And like us at Feminist Book Club, Sister Holiday despises sexism, white supremacy, homophobia, and institutional corruption, and she takes them on headfirst. She's a character who embraces her contradictions and sees her faith as one and the same as her queerness. Author Margot Duahi is also passionate about the reparative potential of crime fiction. Blessed Water is her queer alternative to copaganda that permeates this genre, and a healing balm to anyone who has been harmed by institutions like the Catholic Church. Blessed Water is out March 12, 2024 from Gillian Flynn Books, an imprint of Zando Projects. Yeah, that's right, Gillian Flynn, the author of Gone Girl, put her stamp of approval on this queer nun mystery series, and we are so glad she did. Did we also mention Mara Wilson narrates the audiobook? Yeah, Mara Wilson of Matilda fame. We're smitten, fall in love with this delightfully weird, deliciously gay, and devoutly righteous book series. Thanks to Margot Duahi for sponsoring this episode. Hey everyone, Renee here, and my pronouns are she, her, and today I want to tell you about a book that we do recommend. I know that listening to folks discuss a book they didn't love can be difficult, but I have a book that absolutely surprised me. It was 5 stars, and that is Say Hello to My Little Friend by Janine Capo Crusette. Before we get into my mini review here, I want to read the description because it is a wild ride from the get-go. The description provided by the publisher, Simon & Schuster, is this. Failed pit bull impersonator Ismael Reyes, you can call him Izzy, might not be the Scarface type, but why should that keep him from trying? Growing up in Miami has shaped him into someone who dreams of being the king of the 305 with the money, power, and respect he assumes comes with it. After finding himself at the mercy of a cease and desist letter from Pitbull's legal team and living in his aunt's garage turned efficiency, Izzy embarks on an absurd quest to turn himself into a modern-day Tony Montana. When Izzy's efforts lead him to a tank that houses Lolita, a captive orca at the Miami Seaquarium, she proves just how powerful she is and the water surrounding her really are, permeating everything from Miami's sinking streets to Izzy's memories to the very heart of the novel itself. What begins as Izzy's story turns into a super-saturated fever dream as sprawling and surreal as the Magic City, one as sharp as an iguana's claws and as menacing as a killer whale's teeth. As the truth surrounding Izzy's boyhood escape from Cuba surfaces, the novel reckons with the forces of nature, with the limits and absence of love, and with the dangers of pursuing a tragic inheritance. Wildly narrated and expertly rendered, Say Hello to My Little Friend is Janine Capo Crusette's most daring, heartbreaking, and fearless book yet. Now, when a book purports to be a combination of Moby Dick and Scarface, I am immediately intrigued. That is like the most hilarious and accurate description I could come up with. First, you should know that Lolita, the orca whale at the center of the story, or just left of center of the story, I guess, was an actual whale at the Miami Seaquarium. She tragically died in 2023, and I really urge you to look into the plight of orcas in captivity. This book takes that head on, but what I love about this story is that we do see or read chapters from the perspective of Lolita the whale. I'm a big fan of A, books that change POV, but B, books that change POV into the POV of an animal. I don't know. So it's one of my weirdly specific niches that I love. Things like Lessons in Chemistry does this, and Remarkably Bright Creatures, two of my favorite books. Again, when you shift perspective to an animal, I think it just adds an element of irreverence, but also it's a third point of view that we don't often take into account. And orca whales are incredibly smart. And there becomes this telepathic bond between Izzy, our main character, and Lolita the whale. Now, Izzy is just deeply likable. He's earnest. He's a pit bull impersonator, but he is trying to let that go. His next kind of level up, he decides he's going to be Scarface, and he is searching for his Manolo. And here's the thing. I have never seen Scarface. So much of this book is Izzy trying to apply his life and things that are happening in his life into the narrative of the film Scarface. And honestly, I think it's funnier not knowing the film Scarface and just getting Izzy's perspective of it. I think at one point he even says like, oh yeah, I haven't seen it in years, but like, I want to be like Tony Montana from Scarface. He's a flawed character, but you know, like a good egg at his heart. He's only like 20 something. And just like, you want to take care of this poor broken man. And when you start to dig into his backstory, he does have a tragic backstory. And you can kind of see the impetus of his exploring and trying to earn power and notoriety and wealth. There are a few themes throughout this book, and one is a sense of global warming in that there are multiple references to Miami sinking and everything here is going to be underwater. And I think that is more so a reference to the impermanence of our lives rather than global warming. I think it is more about why not try to be Scarface in a world that is going to be underwater in, you know, 50 years anyways. Like, why not go after your dreams, as absurd as they may seem? Why not at least try? Especially when your history in the story begins as a young child on a raft from Cuba to Florida. Like, the reader is forced to be empathic, is forced to kind of see where Izzy is coming from to have these big dreams. Now, you might be wondering, this is a book that features a young man trying to be Scarface. There's violence, there's sex, there's drugs, there's alcohol, like there's all of it. What makes this book feminist? Why are we talking about it on the Feminist Book Club podcast? And I will tell you, the easy answer is I personally think that when a woman or a femme person writes whatever the fuck she wants, then it's a feminist book. However, I will take it a step further. And I do think that Say Hello to My Little Friend by Jeanine Capo-Crousset, I think, is not just kind of a dark, irreverent story. I think it's also commentary on young Cuban masculinity. And the author is a Cuban-American woman. But I think what she does in this book is offers a lens through which to see masculinity in particular through a feminist lens and kind of a step back to view it in a new light, knowing that gender is a construct, that masculinity is constructed, is influenced by a number of things, including your family and your upbringing, but also popular culture. And I think it is really incredibly done. This is an author that I have had my eyes on for years, and I'm really excited to see what she does next, because the language in this book is so deeply razor sharp. I've never read a book that breaks the fourth wall, but I think it did at some point. Again, this is described as a fever dream, and it absolutely is a fever dream. And by the epilogue, by the way, just hold your horses until the epilogue and you'll just be like, what the fuck just happened? I burst out laughing when I got to the epilogue. But this is truly one of the most unique books I have ever read, and I read a lot of books, as you might imagine. So I wholly recommend it if you're looking for something completely unusual, totally out of left field, a book that doesn't take itself too seriously and yet is still really dark, but also takes place, you know, in the sun-drenched world of Miami. And so there's like hot girls and parties and palm trees, and also the narrations of an orca whale. I mean, truly, I can't make this up, but I'm so glad that Jeanine Capo-Crousset did. So that is my 5 out of 5 stars recommendation. I urge you to check this book out. I don't think it's getting the buzz it wholly deserves. It just came out a couple of weeks ago, so pick it up at your favorite indie bookstore. I will leave a link for it in the show notes as well, and let us know what you think of it. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Happy reading.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pair.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.